I'm Brandon.
And I'm Brandon.
And welcome back to Apollo City Comics, your anything and everything comic book podcast. Dude, what's up? How are you? I don't know how to say, buenos dias.
Buenos dias, I guess.
We're back. We have not gotten to comics in a while, and we keep on itching to give you guys comic book episodes. But you know what? We're giving you a lot of bitchin'-ass interviews. So last time, dude, Exodus, dude, that Kickstarter slayed it. Man, that was a crazy interview, and I hope you guys check it out. I hope you guys look into the book. I mean, zombies invading heaven and hell. Like, what the fuck else do you need to know? Like, go check out that book and check out our last episode about it. Great time we had, for sure. And we are back with a kind of a spontaneous interview that we did because there's a current Kickstarter right now that you should all know about if you know the history of Apollo City Comics. So snuggle up, grab your cup of coffee that you probably got from coffeeandcomic.com, where you can have Frank set up a pull list. I haven't bought comics in like a month and a half, and I set up a pull list, and look at, they were all there waiting for me just to like set up a little order, and I'm going to get a fuck ton of comics that are bagged and boarded with coffee to energize me to read all these perfectly bagged and boarded like books, and I won't be wasting that coffee energy on bagging and boarding them because you get fucking free bags and boards.
Again, how many times can you say bagged and boarded in one sentence?
Yeah, straight that's up, my yeah. I mean, those are two great selling points. I'm just saying, you know, in marketing, that would be awesome. Like Exodus. And then you get bagged and boarded books delivered. You get your indie portion plus whatever the hell else you want. Come on, guys. And you're going to want to stay up because this is the late night episode with the great, magnificent, extravagant creator himself, Goonpad, also known as David Luhan.
Goonpad. Yeah, that's right.
I had to get you on that. Yeah. Right. Like, if I was a reporter that didn't know, like, your name, and I was, like, trying to find reference real fast as I introduce you, like, I'm just like, fuck Goonpad, like.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a story behind why it's called Goonpad, my iPad, but we can get into that later.
No, please tell
horror,
me now.
Horror movies. Oh, my wife and I owned an art gallery called Gallery Black Lagoon, because when we moved in, it used to be a movie store. Had this awesome mural that had like Creature from the Black Lagoon and, you know, Barbarella and all these awesome characters on the side. So the whole neighborhood was up in arms when I painted over the mural that was on the outside of the building. So to kind of appease the masses, I painted a giant Creature from the Black Lagoon carrying a woman in her bikini right on the front of the building in a huge giant mural. And we titled the art gallery, Gallery Black Lagoon. So everything is like a creature phone and a goon pad and like
that's rad, you know,
that kind of stuff.
I got really into Creature. I have a dope Creature Black Lagoon figure. I gotta send you a picture of it just for that. But Brent Hines from Mastodon is also like a huge Creature of the Black Lagoon fan, and he has a whole entire like set up and all this, like a whole like basically house dedicated to all of that. And then they have that song Creature Lives off of the red one that came after Crack the Sky.
Something to the Moon or whatever. No, not the Hunter. I don't remember.
Yeah, the Hunter. The Hunter. It was the Hunter. Hunter. Okay, yeah, the Hunter. Yeah. Yeah.
See,
that, song,
Mastodon.
They, that song. That song. Creature Lives is about Creature Black Lagoon, and it's just, you gotta check it. Dope as fuck. Just to add to your little.
You guys are so much cooler than me. I've met those dudes before because my mother-in-law is friends with
you guys
them.
Are so much cooler than me. I met them, by the way. Let me just.
But I didn't know. I was like, hello. Bearded weirdo man.
Just remember, they formed at a High on Fire concert.
Oh, wow. That's rad.
Okay.
It's really random. I know. It's just a Mastodon episode now. It's just
I'm down for that.
Yeah, I know, right? They're just as nerdy as us, dude. The fucking lead guitarist, he named his son after, like, Luke, and he's got, like, a Star Wars house. I mean, speaking of which, Star Wars cup.
Oh, yeah. Got the episode 3 cup right here. Yeah.
Damn.
It's a protein shake cup because it's Anakin versus. Look at that. It's the 7-Eleven Slurpee cup, actually.
Whoa, is it like holographic?
Yeah, it's holographic.
Hey, look at that. Let me just say, last time we had you on the show, you were hiding your hair, and I didn't realize how wild that thing gets, dude.
Sorry.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, I love it.
I'm usually trying to cover this shit up because it's crazy.
Oh, it's awesome. I'm all here for it.
I feel like if you wore a beanie long enough, you'll look like kind of like a character in a Wes Anderson movie. You know what I mean? Like if you had an orange beanie, like you're that guy in a Wes Anderson movie.
Pretty much. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Like one line of delivery every scene.
Yeah, exactly.
I would just be off in the corner playing acoustic guitar, playing like Brazilian David Bowie covers. You know?
Yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking, the Live Aquatic stuff.
Hey, I'd fund that album.
Yeah, that's a good one. Tell us about your new book. I mean, last time you were around here, you're talking about this wild vampire book called Yuriko that's out through Lesser Known Comics, which you guys should all check out online. And here's a little quick image of it. We'll post it up too.
If you
pledge to a lot of the Kickstarters through Lesser Known Comics, you will get Yuriko with that batch as well. So, tell us about your new book, Nerida.
New book. This is actually my first love. This is the book I was working on, and then I paused, took a break for a second to do a sharp left turn and do some vampire stuff. This one is about a mermaid who gets trapped on land. She gets abducted by fairies. There's like dark wizards that are trying to take over the realms of man and fairies because they got vendettas and blah 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 blah. And she just kind of gets caught in the middle. So that's what this one's all about. The Kickstarter that's live right now is book one, where we find out we meet Nerida, this not unattractive mermaid who finds herself trapped on land without her mermaid's cloak. So she's in her human form, and she very quickly meets the land dwellers, who are not very nice people. So yeah.
Interesting. What, you know, like both your books have like pretty prominent female characters. Like what draws you towards female characters?
That's a good question. I think that like historically, you know, whenever I was in college and I was taking a class on literature and blah, blah, blah. And they were talking about kind of the state of things at the time. And I asked the question, I said, yeah, well, what's going on with black women at this point in time in history that we're studying? And my professor was kind of like, I don't know. What do you mean? I was like, well, you want to talk about the state of how good things are across the board. That's kind of like the litmus test, you know, how are women doing? And, mm-hmm. you know, more specifically, how are minority women doing in society? And that's how you know where things have gotten to as far as acceptance and as far as like equality and all that kind of stuff. So forever, women have kind of been on the forefront of my brain because there's so much male energy out there, especially in the comic book game. There's so many lead characters. There's also a lot of lead female characters, but they're hypersexualized. You know what I mean? So this book actually deals with sexualization from a completely different perspective because it's talking more about the male gaze. She has no problem with her body or her nudity. She's not trying to cover herself up. It's not until somebody tries to basically molest her in the book that she realizes like, oh, what, this is weird. This is fucked up. I don't know what to do. So it's dealing with a lot of those issues. And I think coming from that perspective is interesting for me to get out of my own headspace mm-hmm. as a guy and as a male writer. I try to write about things that I don't know because I'm not a woman. I'm certainly not a mermaid. I'm not Korean and I don't drink blood. So those are all things that I don't have personal experience doing, but it's fun to try and get into that headspace and write a story about that. You know what I mean?
So as far as like, with this new book you have coming out, that's like your original like passion project. Was it one of those things where like you had like mermaid story first and then kind of going into like this like female perspective, or you wanted to tell like a female perspective through like a lens of like a mermaid or something? You know what I mean? Like what came first?
I actually just drew this little pixie looking woman who was hanging out with this cat, and the cat was like as big as her or bigger than her. And I asked my daughter, who was like maybe 3 or 4 at the time, I was like, is she tiny or is the cat huge? And she was like, oh, she's tiny. And I said, okay, all right, cool. So now I had this tiny female with like a spear who's like hunting birds and stuff. with a cat that's full size, and I didn't know why. I was like, I gotta write some kind of story to get there, because I dropped myself into the middle of the thing and it didn't make any sense to me. And I was like, well, there's got to be a logical explanation for this. So I came up with this crazy idea that it could be somebody who got abducted by fairies and shrunk by fairies, and how does that work, blah blah blah. And as I'm working on this, my friend gives me a book about like fairies, gnomes, and other little people by Thomas Keightley. And it reads like nonfiction, but it's all about like Grimm's fairy tales and the crazy trolls that lived in churches before the Catholics moved in and all of that kind of stuff. It was super interesting. It's excellent if you're sitting on the pot pooping and you need something to read. Because it's all in little short segments. And you're like, damn, that was a really cool story. But the ones about mermaids caught my attention the most. And they were just like, I mean, gorgeous stories that just like pulled on the heartstrings, which you don't want to be crying while you're pooping. But, you know, if you have to, you know.
It's a strong emotional moment. You know what I mean?
It's never really a restroom. You know, sometimes you are struggling in there.
Yes. The struggle's real. The struggle is real. So anyway, yeah, that's kind of where the mermaid thing came from, because those stories stuck out to me much more than all of the other stuff. But it's also fun to kind of take all of that that folklore and just ball it up and make it my own and do whatever I want to with it. And, you know, like a silky is different from a mermaid, is different from a siren, is different from a... There's all kinds of different stuff in the pantheon of mermaid stuff. But for me, I just took it all as like, obviously, they're all the same creature. The same, they all come from the same thing, because all of these mythologies sprung up at different places on Earth at about the same time, about the same kind of creature. You know what I mean? So it stands to reason that they were all the same thing. They just happened in different places, and people had different ways of describing them. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
So are mermaids real? Like, do you know enough about them to, like, confirm, like...
Yeah.
He came with that question with such genuine like emotion. He's like, are they real, bro? Like,
I needed to know. No, I want to hear it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, fuck yeah.
100%. Absolutely. Mermaids are real. Vampires are real. Yeah, all of it. For sure.
That's amazing. That's like all I needed from this episode, is like the confirmation that this shit, like, I want to like know. I mean, it totally makes sense. You know what I mean? The ocean is just so wild, and time is so fucking long in that sense. Like, dating back to, they probably saw how shitty we were as humans and were like, fuck this. And they just dove further down, you know, like,
we've only explored like 1% of the ocean technically, as like, according to some like studies.
Yeah. Like it's
that's
like
a real fact.
So, you know, have you always been curious about like obscure aspects or mythologies or histories of things like this? Like, I mean, vampires to mermaids. Like, I know you did a lot of research on both ends. What's the research process for you like, you know, besides, you know, going through the short stories and stuff like that? Like, what is it, just like whatever clicks with you at the moment and then you just dive into that aspect? Like, how do you overwhelm yourself with information to make a unique story out of these character types of characters?
Well, I guess what I'll do is I'll write myself into a corner and I'll be like, ah, how does this work? Like, I got to make these puzzle pieces fit. Mm-hmm. And then I'll start reading about it to try and figure out, oh, okay, well, I could use this key and that key, and I could tweak this little piece of information and that would work to make this happen and the thing and blah, 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 blah. And that's kind of how I research these things to get them to where they make sense within the context of the book. But the key is, for me anyway, not to just completely explain everything like your awesome Slurpee cup. That movie just explained everything. It was like, this happened, then this happened, then this happened. And it was boring as fuck. So for me, I like to leave a little bit, or I like to only describe as much as I need to in order to make the story make sense. And then beyond that, leave it up to the reader to kind of guess at what's happening behind, you know, like, why, how are these things? Like, I allude to the great cat wars of the past or something, where like these two fairies are jawing about stuff, and one of them tells them that a cat's supposed to meet them that night, and the other one is like, a cat? Are you crazy? Like, a cat ate my entire family during the cat wars. What are you doing? There's no other mention made about the cat wars, but apparently at some point in time, some cats just like decimated the fairy kingdom and like ate a bunch of fairies and shit. So it leaves like things kind of wide open for people to say, oh, what is that about? I don't know. Spin-off series, I guess.
Dude, that sounds like a dope ass book that I want to see.
Come out, right?
The Cat Wars. Hell yeah.
That's brutal.
Like, yeah. Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
So did, you know, drawing this over the like the, you know, have you been drawing it? Has it been complete for a while? And like, or did you come back to it and kind of redo some stuff? And with that, like, what was influencing you artistically as you were drawing the book?
Excellent question, sir. No one knows that you're inebriated at this point. Your questions are so good.
Our one viewer that's going to be offended.
No. Sorry. Show him the Slurpee cup and all will be well.
Just do the quick spin.
Star Wars. Get in there. So this book, I drew it, and then when I wanted to re-release it, I had like 5 issues done, and I talked to Mark over there at LKC, and I said, hey, why don't I just do like a collected edition, like a perfect bound book that's, you know, 150 pages, because I have like 200 pages done. And he said, yeah, that'd be cool, but people really like to collect like issue number 1 and then issue number 2 and issue number 3. He's like, so if you make it a protracted thing and you release them all one at a time, then you can do a collected edition once you've gotten to issue 5, you know. And being the shrewd businessman that he is, he was right. That's a very smart thing to do. So then when I went back and I looked at issue 1, I was like, man, I could draw better than that. That was from like many moons ago. I could definitely do better than that. So I told Mark that it was done. I said, oh yeah, it's ready to go. He's like, okay, we'll just upload it to the thing, and we'll have Amal check it out, and he'll do his magic design work on it, and we'll send it off to pre-press. And I was like, yeah, give me till Friday. It'll be cool. And so then I just chained myself to my desk and I drew it in like 7 days. I just like banged it out. And when I was done, I showed it to him and he was like, yeah, that's awesome. But I did one panel that was in color. I was just messing around. I was like, yeah, I don't know anything about color. He said, you should color it. It'd be cool. And on that one comment, I was like, okay, sure, let's color it. So then I strapped myself to my desk again. And for a whole nother week, I was just figuring out how to color the book. Because this is the first book I've ever colored before. So yeah, that's how the process went in terms of like illustration. It took me about 2 weeks to make, and I was way behind schedule because I had told Mark that I was already done with the book. Don't
that's
tell him. He doesn't ever listen to these podcasts, so it's cool. That's cool. And you guys don't know him either, so it's fine.
Dude, that's how comics get made. That tight deadline. You know, you're just sitting there waiting for it to happen, and then all of a sudden, bam, it's like, boom. You're like, shit. I need to do it. Like, it needs to happen right now. And then it's all of a sudden complete, and you're like, fuck, what if I put time into this? Would it have been better? But fuck it.
What I'm curious about is, like, you know, a lot of people that don't really, like, understand the process of creating comics just kind of think you just draw the thing and it magically happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, for you, you know, you were saying this is the first book you've ever colored, you know, at least put out in color and colored yourself. Now, as someone who's been drawing pretty consistently for years now at this point, you know, would you feel like coloring is almost like a different ballgame compared to drawing the pencil art? Or do you feel like it's more difficult? Do you feel like one is easier than the other? Or do you feel like you're just kind of like, well, shit, I got to do this myself, so I'm just going to knock it out and not think about it?
I think that there are like, so I talked to Scott Circland about coloring recently. There are like a billion different ways you can color. And the way that I decided to go about it is what I felt like was the most efficient way to do it. Because for me, all of my books had already been done in black and white. So there's all the tonal gradations, there's all the ink work, the pages are all laid out, panels are done, words are done, everything's ready to go. And what that allowed me to do was to basically paint underneath it with color. So the hardest part for me was to figure out what my palette was going to be. I don't do a whole lot of like fades between colors. I personally don't like the look of like the digital soft brush fades that happen when you're painting. It just looks fade. It looks like you did it on an iPad. So I prefer kind of flat coloring, like blocks of color. Right. And I rely on the tones that I made in black and white to give that color its gradation, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, which is a completely different way of coloring from the way I colored A Night at the Parlor, which is in your punk rock anthology.
I was trying to think of that too. I was trying to think of, like, because I've seen The Night at the Parlor so much, and I was okay. Well, tell me about that one too, how you did that one differently after this. Okay.
So this one with Narita, it's all like ink washes and stuff, and then I figured out what my palette was going to be, like the colors that I was going to use, and so I can refer back to them. And
so how did you decide on a palette? Like that just sounds like the hardest fucking thing ever.
You steal from someone where it looks really cool. You're like, that looks awesome, and then you use their colors, and then it looks like shit because you're not them, and then you take it and you tweak it and you try and mess with like the color, like the hue and saturation until it gets somewhere where you're like, okay, that's mine. I like that. That's different from what they were doing.
Nice.
It started there, but it ended here. I like that. And then you've got your color palette.
Just like any art, basically. Like
basically, yeah. Every song I've ever written, every piece of art I've ever drawn, everything's good artists make and great artists steal. Like, right? So
yeah, that's how you do it.
I mean, when you start drawing, they always recommend a trace, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You trace stuff, and then you learn how the lines work and how everything's connected, and then after that, you can kind of keep going from there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But so with Night at the Parlor, that one was set up. I just launched into that like a printmaker would, because I'm a screen printer. Well, screen printer. I'm a printmaker, as it were.
I want a list of all your professions, like just like have like a block of something in a book one day.
Plumber, electrician. I was doing some electrical work today. That sucked. It's terrible.
At the very bottom, it just says forklift certified. Like,
yeah. That's the one thing I'm not certified. But my brother-in-law was trying to teach me how to use the skid steer.
I got you beat there.
Illegally forklift.
That's all you need, right? Yeah.
It'll just be illegally forklift certified.
He just pencils it in.
Yeah.
So with Night at the Parlor, I took that like a printmaker would. So I took three colors and I said, I'm sticking to these three colors only. But I dropped the opacity on them so that they, when they layer on top of each other, they create another color. Right. So the lines are like kind of a darkish purple maroon. Then there's this yellow color, and then there's this red color that's got like a dropped opacity. So when the characters go outside onto the patio, right, they're no longer inside the club. It's all light. It's all lit up with kind of yellows everywhere. You know what I mean? And the pinks just make shadows. As soon as they go back into the club where all the melee is happening, where the punk band's playing, where the bartender's like hitting people in the face with the cheese grater and stuff, you use the yellow just as highlights to light up certain areas, like from the cooler, from the beer cooler, or from the stage or something like that. But everything else is red. That's the main saturating color of the space. So limiting oneself to just saying, I'm just going to use these three colors, I feel like is very effective, especially if you don't really know what to do, because color can get really overwhelming. You know what
I mean? That was literally going to be like my next question. Going with like three colors, like, do you have like a spectrum that you're like, I need to have this aspect, this like a bright, a dark, and like a medium, or how
cool
do you?
Cool or warm, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. The color palette for Narita is very, very cool because it's at night, and everything's lit up by moonlight. So like all the highlights on everybody's face and on the sides of their bodies and stuff, I did like this crazy, really light, like almost paisley baby blue, and that's supposed to be the moonlight that's washing over everybody, and it felt really weird to like have this character and you know you colored it and it looks real awesome and all the colors are just the way you want them, you're like, now I'm gonna go all along the side of their face with this bright ass blue, and it feels weird, but then once you do it, you're like, that totally makes sense. If you wash out like half of their person or half of the whatever the shiny character is with this moonlight, it really has this awesome effect of like making it pop on the page and giving the page like dynamics that it didn't necessarily have before that, you know? So I think that's one of the aspects that this book benefited from, not being black and white and being done in color, is that I was able to play with those like lights and darks you were talking about, tonal gradation, but also just like pops of color where you wouldn't necessarily expect them. And maybe they don't really exist in reality that way, but it works, I think, in a comic book format in ways that it couldn't work any other way. You know what I mean?
100%.
Yeah. So you said you worked with three colors, right?
For the night at the Night at the Parlor, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So when it comes to like creating, you know, these tones and these palettes, do you feel having less colors to choose from, like restrictions almost create more creativity?
Yes, because you have to figure out how to describe things and make them stand out from each other. I recently just did a book cover, like for a novel for this guy named Morgan Quaid. He sent me this.
Oh, nice.
You know Morgan. Yeah. He sent me this book jacket, and he was like, "Hey, dude, I've been struggling with this. Like, I tried my hand at designing this myself, and I just spent like I don't know how many hours on it, and I feel like I maybe went backwards, and it looks worse than when I started. Could you help me?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." One of the things that I noticed was that his tones, for example, the lead character was carrying a gun, but the gun behind the gun was a background of like a cityscape, and the cityscape was kind of in the same value as the gun, so the gun gets lost, right? So when you're dealing with, for example, that book cover only had four colors total on it, right? Mm-hmm. You're simplifying it so it stands out and people will see it on the bookshelf, but also you're simplifying it so that you can say, okay, well, that needs to stand out, so it's going to be this color. That stands out, or that needs to drop back, so it's going to be that color, that kind of thing. And you can play them off of each other much more easily. Whereas if you have the whole spectrum, the whole universe of colors going on, well, shit, you might have like a really awesome green and a really awesome blue, but the green and the blue look so similar, or they're like different value shades, and it can get really, really complex. And kudos to people who can make that happen. But for me, man, limit yourself until you grow slowly. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, that's totally great advice, dude. I'm stealing the fuck out of everything you just said. 100%. I'm like just taking the notes. Do you use a lot, like, do you really just like traditional, or how much do you dabble between traditional and digital? Like, you know, 60-40, like, does it just depend on the project? Do you just like not like digital in that aspect, or do you like the tweaking aspects of it?
So digital, I illustrate all of my comic books almost exclusively in digital. I was doing it traditional for a long time, but I feel like the immediacy of doing digital has basically just amplified my speed. Like I can go so much faster. I can knock out, you know, a page a day, two pages a day on digital. Whereas if I'm doing it traditional, I could maybe get to the inking stage in a day, and then it would be 2 days and I'm done with that inking stage, and then I have to scan it in, and then I have to color it, I have to put in the shadows, I have to do this, that, and the other. Whereas digitally, man, you can just wham bam, thank you ma'am, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like,
what do you use fast.
I know we talked about this on Instagram briefly. We like mentioned it in a comment at one point. Now it's all coming back to me, but what do you use in that aspect?
I use Clip Studio.
Okay.
I tried Autodesk Sketchbook first because I am a cheap ass dude, and that's free. The inking engine actually you know what's up. On Autodesk Sketchbook, the inking engine that they use is amazing. It's actually really, really good.
Nice.
And I loved it. It was great. Then I tried Procreate, and Procreate is just not built for comic making. You can't pull frames easily. You can't add text easily. Importing fonts is kind of squishy. I don't like the brushes that they have. You can import really cool brushes, but I don't want to spend the time to import cool brushes from some other program. Then I found Clip Studio, which is it costs money like yearly. But I figure, man, I'm getting my money's worth, because this thing is like, it's like what Photoshop was back in the day, but on an iPad and souped up with all kinds of extra shit. You can do vector, you can draw with vectors, so you can do animation and you can move your lines. You can, you know, you can color, you can do all kinds of crazy stuff. Clip Studio gets my full endorsement for sure for illustrating, especially for comic books.
That's cool. I've been using like Procreate, and I always just thought I was like really fucking ignorant about Procreate because it was just like difficult to like kind of figure out and navigate and some of the like features I thought it would have to like cut and paste something or maybe realign stuff. It wasn't really there, and it just haven't felt like it's been efficient. And I just thought I didn't like digital inking or coloring or anything, drawing in general, because of like how it felt on it. But it could just be Procreate that I'm not really a fan of. So I might give, I might look into Clip Studio in that aspect, because it's just been, it's been weird with Procreate.
Procreate is like so user-friendly. It's almost like a, an Apple product, a Mac product, where it's so user-friendly that it's confusing.
Yeah.
Where you're like,
yeah.
I don't know where I am. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Clip Studio is made by some PC using Chinese people. So if you're an old PC user like me from back in the day who also used to be Chinese, no, I wasn't ever Chinese, but in spirit I was. I watched a lot of Kung Fu movies. If you watch Kung Fu movies, you will like Clip Studio.
Oh, there you go. That's a good slogan right there.
So if you're like a starting artist with like, or starting and starving artist really, who doesn't have a lot of money to like throw at these programs, Clip Studio would be your number one recommendation?
Clip Studio is kind of, it's the thing you'd have to keep paying for. So no, Clip Studio is the program that you want to get. If you're using a Wacom tablet on a laptop or a computer, it comes with Clip Studio for free.
Oh, wow. That's sick.
Nice.
Yeah. So, and you upload it onto your PC. And for PC users, it's a one-time deal. It's just, you don't have to, you can pay to upgrade it, but you don't have to pay every year. For an iPad, if you're illustrating on a tablet, it's a yearly fee, depending on how boss you want your thing to be, right? So I just have like the intro, whatever, lowest grade thing for an iPad. And it's pretty baller, dude. I can do all kinds of crazy shit with that.
Yeah, look at your shit. Like, it's fucking dope. You know what I mean? Like, that's just, like, proof in itself. Damn, you should get, like, an endorsement after this episode. We should get, like a discount code or something. Like,
he's just like, this shit right here?
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, sure. Y'all don't even know, man. What?
Speaking of that dope-ass bar you just landed, you know, aside from making comics and doing all this other cool stuff, you're in bands, like, plural.
Yes.
You make music as well. And it's, dude, honestly, it's funny how many like musician comic book makers there are like in the universe that I've just slowly met between you, between Mark, between Brandon. Like all of us were just musicians that are just like now like really delved into the comic book world. And I love that you're still playing music and playing shows. And tell us, just give us a quick shout out to your bands right now. Like, what are they? What are they about? Like, where do they kind of come from? Where did your musicality come from? I'm really curious.
So I'm in like three or four projects right now. I'm in two main projects. One of them is called Born Twins. In that project, I play drums and bass and I sing all at the same time. And my wife plays guitar and she sings. Sounds kind of crazy, and it is crazy. But yeah, that's kind of like a dark pop, kind of Cure-esque post new wave. I sound like a schmuck right now. Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
All right, I just looked you guys up. Is it the same Born Twins with a few hours after this?
Yeah.
All right.
Fucking dope.
Yeah, and that's actually a Cure cover song that we did. But
nice.
So with that project, we, you know, had bass players in and out of the band forever. And then our last bass player dipped out. He actually moved to China to go study Kung Fu on a mountaintop with a Kung Fu master. So we couldn't really get mad at him.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a legit reason. I've heard, you know.
Yeah. If you're going to leave a band, shit.
he went out in a blaze of glory. But we decided, we were like, man, I don't want to play with the backing track. And I don't want to like get another bass player, because obviously they're all terrible. No offense to either of you guys if you play bass.
We both play bass, actually.
Yeah.
like we're both bassists, which is hilarious. Yeah.
Losers. So what I decided to do was I went on Craigslist and I found an electric organ and I just chopped just the like bass pedals out of it with my sawzall, just like cut it apart, tip the bass pedals out of there. And I play bass with my foot. And
you're
like
Geddy
a
Lee, dude.
Contraption.
Yeah, there you go.
What's that?
Yeah, you're like Geddy Lee.
Like Geddy Lee, except not as good. Yeah, but yeah, same idea.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I'm playing bass with my foot while I'm playing drums and singing. But it's me and my wife, and it's just two of us. So like, when we book shows, sometimes we book them out of book shows out of town or whatever, and they're expecting like a folk duo, you know, like we'll show up and be like, "We love you and we love bread" or something like that. And it's not like that. It's like super loud drums and her guitar is like gnarly distorted and our amps are like, you know, 1200 watts a piece. So, but anyway, yeah, that's one band. The other band is Yardwork. I play guitar in that band, and it's just like a stupid, shitty punk band.
Yardwork. All right, here we go.
Yeah, we've got a song called "Snake in the House." It's about a snake in the house. Or another one is called "Ladies Love a Man Who Loves the Lawnmower," because they do. It's true, man.
They do. Yeah, he's like, I can confirm.
So those are my two main projects,
dude. That's right now, dope. Anyway. That is too dope.
There like, we go, found you.
How long have you been playing music for? Like, where did you start? Like, how did this become a passion with along with making other stuff?
Man, I've been playing music at least like playing like live shows in Austin since I was like 16 or something. Nice. I remember the first time I tried to play a show during South by Southwest. I was in high school and they wouldn't let me into the venue because I was too young. And I was like, I'm in that band. And they're like, yeah, liar. And I'm like, no. And they're like, how did you get here? I was like, I walked and I took the bus, man. I can't even drive. And they're like, ugh. So that's how it all started. But I just kept going, you know. I've been writing songs forever and ever and ever.
That's cool as shit, dude. I love how much you've been up to and you continue to do. And it looks like there's a lot more on the horizons. And as we like segue into that to like start wrapping this up a little, like what is, you know, anything else you're working on right now? Any other ideas cooking that you're going to be maybe can like talk about or maybe kind of announce a little bit? Hit towards,
So this is a super secret, super, super secret, secret sneak peek that I haven't told anybody about.
Fuck yeah.
There's a new book. It's called Big Game Saga that I'm going to be working on with this guy named Bill Poor. He's a screenwriter and he contacted me and he said, "Hey, I got this idea for a comic book." I was like, "Oh yeah." Essentially, there's like a slimy kind of salesman guy who's selling experiences to like really beefed up tech bros who have too much money, right? Where he'll go back in time with his time machine and he'll pluck out warriors from the past and bring them to the present day to battle one-on-one with these like CrossFit jerks, right? But if it looks like it's gone pear-shaped, they'll just tranquilize the guy, the historical figure, so that the tech bro can win, right? Mm-hmm. So it's real sleazy capitalism stuff. Well, one guy wants to fight a samurai. So they go back, they try and find the samurai, can't find the samurai, or for something happens, I haven't gotten the script yet, but this is the way he described it. He was like, so they just say, let's just get this farmer, whatever. He's from feudal Japan. He's just some farmer dude. They don't know he's a ninja. So he proceeds to fuck everybody up and escape. And they're like, oh fuck, what do we do now? They've wrecked the timeline of Earth. They let this guy go. He's been tranquilized, but he's a ninja, so it didn't stop him. He's like in the wilds of Africa now, trying to figure out where he is, what to do, blah, 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 blah. And we go from there. So yeah, I'm really excited about that book.
Fuck.
See how that one goes. Yeah.
That sounds dope. That sounds like it's going to be a big endeavor and pretty challenging compared to what else you've done so far.
It's not a microcosm. It's going to take place in like several historical regions. It's going to be wide expansive. So,
damn, that's going to be so. I can't wait to see that fruition and like come about, dude. All this stuff, like, you know, is any of the music available for people to stream and listen to as well? Like,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, actually, Born Twins has a new record coming out in May May 6th, I believe. And we've got a new single that's dropping on March 3rd. We're on Spotify, Apple, iTunes, all of the stuff. And Yardwork is as well. If you want to listen to some rah-rah punk rock as well, that's up there. Yeah.
Yeah, I found I found both your projects on YouTube Music. So it's easy to come across.
Nice. Hell yeah. Dude, so you have the Kickstarter going live right now. Narita's kicking ass. And anything that you want to mention about any of these tiers or something that people could look out for while it's still running right now?
Yes. So the books that are there in the Kickstarter are unique in that they are going to be printed on like really high quality paper. If you pick up one of these books later on in the comic book store, it may be a little thinner. It may be not quite as like Super Boss Pro high quality comics Wellspring. That being said, you should back the Kickstarter so you can get the Primo copy right now. We've also got four variant covers up there, including a sketch cover that I will do for you if you so choose, and I'll draw whoever or whatever you want me to draw, because I can draw stuff without an iPad, and it's fun to draw stuff without an iPad, especially if you want me to draw some sexy women, because I know how to do that.
There we go. That's what we want.
Yeah.
So I already pledged. I pledged before the episode started. So you're telling me if I pledge again, you'll draw Brandon and I as mermaids on the cover?
If you buy a sketch cover, if you add that on, yeah, I will draw you guys as all right.
That's what we want. That's what we want. Hell yeah!
You
that's
heard
what
we're gonna
do. Yeah, there we go.
We'll do that if I
yeah.
do.
We'll go half on that one. Yeah.
Yeah. No problem.
Yes, there you go, oh, dude. Fuck yeah! All right. Yeah. All right. Tell us more about these variant covers. I'm so hyped about that. That's gonna happen. Yeah. Everyone listening, just wait.
My last question I wanted to ask real quick was so with Uriko and Narita, right? We were like, that's how you pronounce it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, you got like one that's based in like Korea, one that's like Celtic with mermaids, and then one's like vampires. Is there like another part of like, you know, mythology or parts of the world or folklore that you've always kind of like had in the back of your head you want to tackle, or anything that like the next character you want to create, something in that more like mythological setting or just another part of the world that has you intrigued? Anything like that?
The two things that I would really like to tackle are actual historical fiction from West Texas. I have a collection of short stories that I've written about crazy stuff that happened in West Texas to my grandfather who grew up out there. And I'd like to illustrate some of that.
Where in West Texas?
My grandpa went to high school in Marfa. He grew up in Redford, Eagle Pass. He was born in Eagle Pass. So okay. Right down the street from you, man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's rad. That's super cool.
So that's one thing that I would like to do. That would be definitely like an adult book for adults to read, because children aren't into business superheroes. The other thing I want to do is something like outer space, spaceships, laser guns, you know, intergalactic something or other. Because I haven't done any like sci-fi stuff at all. Mm. Like the most I've done is that one variant cover on the Narita campaign where I dressed up my mermaid as Princess Leia and gave her a blaster, and that was it.
That was sick as fuck, too. That was such a cool image. I love that one, dude. So great. Dude,
thanks.
Dude, hell yeah.
Outer space.
I think your coloring for stuff like that would just be mind-blowing. That just gets me kind of excited, just the thought of you doing space shit. Yes, that's what I want. That's what I want from you.
Yeah, there's a lot you can work with there, too. There's so much open to you.
Well, dude.
Yeah. Anyway. No, I was just saying, I haven't delved into trying to write anything like that. So I would need to find someone else to write it probably, and then I could illustrate it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally.
Hell yeah. That's a call, people. That's a call.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. Yeah. Pitch David. You just get all these pitches. We just blow up your inbox with a bunch of people.
Your whole inbox is like 100 new messages.
That's fine with me. That'd be great.
Hell yeah, man. Well, dude, one, thanks for coming back on the show. I mean, it's always a pleasure, and it's a pleasure just having, I know we do a lot of LKC people, but like, it's just, everyone's having such unique books and unique stories to tell. And just the art is, you know, so diverse between everybody on the team, and it's just amazing. And I love seeing what everyone's up to. So keep an eye out for the Kickstarter. Get your copies now, like he was saying, because of the print quality. And dude, I mean, look out for his story in our anthology that's coming out. That Kickstarter should be going on probably around late April at this point. So we'll have some updates on that as well. But David, any last like plugs, social media things you want to say before we take off?
You can follow me at at Narita Comic on pretty much everything, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or Discord. If you want to chat with me, feel free to join my Discord and ask me about coloring, drawing, and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, there we go.
There we go. Yeah. Just going to be adding you all day and just blowing up your shit. Brad. Well, guys, thanks for hanging.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you.